Today's podcast sponsor is Hover. Hover.com specializes in domain names, and if you're ready to start something new, head over to hover.com/ordinaryvegan for 10% off.
You're listening to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast, where we teach you everything you need to know about adopting a plant-based diet, full or part-time. Our goal is to empower you to live a long and healthy life. You can find today's show at ordinaryvegan.net or on iTunes. If you have any questions, please send an email to questions@ordinaryvegan.net.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Ordinary Vegan Podcast, number 82, Hormonal Imbalance, Causes and Treatment, with Dr. Neil Bernard. If we haven't met, my name is Nancy Montori, and I advocate a whole food, plant-based diet for health, wellness, and longevity. I am here to serve you and help you stay as healthy as possible. You can find me and my cookbook called The Easy 5-Ingredient Vegan Cookbook and my organic vegan CBD oil from hemp on my website at ordinaryvegan.net. You will also find lots of vegan essentials like plant-based protein lists, gluten and soy-free vegan lists, vegan shopping lists, and more, all on my website. There are also delicious plant-based recipes. Just search for an ingredient and you will find a recipe. I do it all, and I'm not perfect, I admit that, but I definitely try hard. Today, we have a special guest who has been on this podcast before. His name is Dr. Neil Bernard, and he is one of the world's most respected authority on vegan diets. He is a faculty member of the George Washington University School of Medicine and president of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Dr. Bernard's research, funded by the U.S. government, revolutionized the dietary approach to type 2 diabetes, and his findings have influenced the policies of the U.S. Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, the American Diabetes Association, and the American Medical Association. But that's not all. He is also a best-selling author of many books, including Dr. Neil Bernard's Program for Reversing Diabetes, Power Foods for the Brain, and one of his most famous is called The Cheese Trap. Today, we're going to talk about his new book, Your Body in Balance, The New Science of Food, Hormones, and Health, which explains the new science behind hormonal imbalance and how we can get our hormonal imbalance under control to avoid everything from infertility, premenstrual syndrome, hormonal cancers like breast and prostate cancer, thyroid conditions, and more. So, let's get started. But before we do, I would like to thank this week's podcast sponsor, Hover. Sponsors are what makes this podcast possible. I know a lot of you are exploring exciting new directions in your life, and that may involve an online website. Well, Hover wants you to start that something exciting with them. With Hover, you can register a domain name for your next venture. Hover has over 300 domain name extensions to choose from when building your brand online. No matter what you want to build, there's a domain name waiting for it, from .dev to .app to .design to .blog to .store, and so much more. And take it from me, you'll find excellent technical support available to answer any questions you may have. Hover knows you will do something that will make a difference. Grab your domain name and many more at hover.com/ordinaryvegan for a 10% discount on all new purchases. Make a name for yourself with Hover. Now, let's welcome Dr. Neil Bernard. Hi, Dr. Bernard. Welcome back, and thank you so much for joining the Ordinary Vegan community today.
It's great to be with you.
Your previous podcast, number 23, about how to break the cheese addiction is one of my most popular podcasts. So we really appreciate having you here.
Oh, it's great to be back.
Your latest book, Your Body in Balance, The New Science of Food, Hormones, and Health, covers a lot of territory.
and explores a range of hormonal health problems and solutions to those problems with a lot of great scientific evidence to back it up. So the first question I wanted to ask you is, what are hormones exactly?
Hormones are, you can think of them as sort of like a letter that comes in the mail. Hormones are compounds that are made in one part of the body, and then they travel along through the bloodstream to another part of the body where they give it directions on what to do. So, for example, the thyroid gland at the base of your neck makes thyroid hormone, which travels in the bloodstream to the cells of the body to give them energy. And it tells them to ramp up their metabolism or to ramp it back down. And estrogens, which come from a woman's ovaries to reach, say, for example, her uterus to get ready for reproduction. Or in a man's body, the testes make testosterone, which goes in his blood. And I guess you might say it goes to his brain and makes him want to run for president or do other things. Anyway, the hormones go from one part of the body to another with some important instructions.
You say in your book that fat cells are hormone factories. Can you tell me what you mean by that?
Yes. Body fat creates estrogens, female sex hormones. And where you'll see this perhaps most notably is you're at a beach in the summertime and you see a guy who's got a fair amount of breast development, and you think that's maybe unusual for a guy. And that what's happening is that as he gains weight, his fat cells will make extra estrogen that causes breast tissue to form. In a woman's body, if she has extra body fat, that can create estrogen, female sex hormone, that can increase her risk of breast cancer and other problems. So having extra body fat has an effect on our hormones.
A very common problem for many people is acne, especially for a younger generation. Are foods like chocolate to blame, or is acne only a hormonal disorder?
All of the above, probably. Chocolate got a not guilty verdict some years ago, but I think it was a premature verdict because people have looked at it a little bit more and found that that acne really can be made worse by certain foods, including chocolate. One of the foods, though, that really has come up is dairy. And part of that is because if you take a chocolate bar and you turn it around and look at the back of it, look at the ingredients list, milk products are often the first or second ingredient in it, milk, chocolate. And so researchers have been looking at milk, and they found that the more milk people drink, that they tend you tend to see more acne reported, particularly adolescent acne. So chocolate itself, I think, can be an issue, but the ingredients such as milk that are added to it can probably contribute as well.
Is there anything else that a younger generation can do besides not eat dairy?
Well, let me say that if kids get away from dairy, they are doing a great thing. If they do nothing else, getting away from dairy products and animal products in general, that's really a huge step forward. However, you know, people can certainly do other things. Following a generally plant-based diet or totally plant-based diet is always a good thing. Some people have suggested that salt may play a role with regard to that as well. So stay tuned. But there's a common theme that runs through your body in balance, and that's get away from the animal products, get away from the dairy in particular, but all of them. Keep oils really low, too. For many people, that's the other part of it. Getting away from animal products, great, but get rid of that greasy stuff too.
Can we address some of the common hormone-related problems like infertility and menopausal symptoms? Because according to the womenshealth.gov, about 10% of women have trouble getting or staying pregnant. Can we talk about infertility and ways to improve the chances of becoming pregnant?
Yes. We kind of stumbled into this accidentally through a very different direction. I was sitting at my desk one day and the phone rang, and it was a young woman who wasn't complaining of fertility problems. She was complaining of cramps. And I realized that the amount of estrogen in the blood could have a determinant effect. If you have too much estrogen, it could make cramps worse because it thickens up the lining of the uterus too much each month, and that makes it more painful at the end of the month. So anyway, we did a research study to show that a low-fat vegan diet could help cramps, and it does. When people do two things, when young women, or not so young women, Avoid animal products completely, and also keep oily foods scrupulously low. Cramps are often much better or even gone. Anyway, in the course of that study, the question of fertility came up because I had one of our research participants was infertile. And the second month that she was in the study and on the low-fat vegan diet, she came into the research center and said, "Dr. Barnard, I have some bad news and some good news." I said, "Well, what is that?" She said, "I'm leaving your study because I am pregnant."
Wow.
Anyways, I ran into her several years later. She had three children. What I'm getting at is that when hormones are out of balance, ovulation is not normal. And many women who have a diagnosis of infertility may be out of balance in one way or another. And so that's why we, again, recommend diets that are plant-based. A vegan diet, a diet with no animal products, means that every bite you eat is from a plant. Plants have fiber. Fiber helps get estrogens back into the right balance. Every bite of a chicken breast or salmon or yogurt is from an animal. It doesn't have any fiber. It pushes the diet in the wrong direction.
Well, infertility is also a man's problem. Do hormones play a role on the male side?
Oh, they sure do. Researchers in Rochester, New York, did an interesting study. They went into a fertility clinic, and they did sperm counts in men. And when you do this, you look at the number of sperm. You look at their motility, meaning do they swim straight? And you look at their morphology, meaning the shape of them. So if a man's got not very many sperm and they can't swim straight and they looked all banged up, he's got a fertility issue. What they discovered was the men who ate more cheese seemed to have indices of lower fertility. And some other studies have supported this. And the question is, what the heck is it about cheese? Well, if you send some cheese to a laboratory and you say, what's with this? They'll say, well, there's a lot of fat in there, and there's a lot of cholesterol, and there's a lot of salt, and so forth. But what is probably the big issue with fertility in men and cheese is that cheese contains concentrated hormones that came from the cow. Cows are, on all dairies, are impregnated every year. That when cows are pregnant, they have infants. And after they have a calf, they produce more milk. And so they're kept pregnant every year. They're impregnated annually. And they're milked during their 9-month pregnancy, not through the whole thing, but through much of it. And when they're pregnant, they create a lot of estrogen. The estrogen gets in the milk. And if you take a bucket of milk and send it out to a laboratory, they'll say, you know, there's estrogens in here. And so it's not very much. It's just a trace. However, when you turn the milk into cheese, it's concentrated, and the average American consumes 37 pounds of cheese every year, plus milk, plus yogurt, plus ice cream. And so they're getting estrogens, and it affects women, it affects men. So if you're trying to get pregnant, which I'm not necessarily promoting, but if you are, getting away from animal products is the best thing you can do.
Cramps and premenstrual syndrome can be a really serious disorder. You talk about a study that was done about PMS in your book. Can you tell us about that and how foods help make your period shorter and lighter?
Yes. We were working with Georgetown University's Department of OBGYN, and we brought in a large group of women. They all had moderate to severe menstrual cramps, and we put them on a diet that had two steps. One was animal products were eliminated, and the diet was very low in fat. Those two steps will cause the amount of estrogen in the blood, the female sex hormone, to calm down, to get into the right balance, to not too much, not too little. If you have more fat, or if you don't have enough fiber, then the estrogen is going to probably rise to an unhealthful level. When a woman has too much estrogen in her blood, that estrogen, we believe, thickens up the inner lining of the uterus too much. That's called the endometrium. It's the the innermost lining of the uterus, and it's there. It thickens up every month in anticipation of pregnancy. And if you have extra estrogen in your blood, it thickens up more. And so at the end of the month, when the menstrual cycle begins, you're shedding this larger endometrium. It takes more days to get rid of it. The flow is longer, it's more voluminous, it's full of clots, and you get more pain. And so if a woman's got those symptoms, they don't have to take this on faith. But for the next 2 months, for the next two monthly cycles, do two things. Eliminate animal products, so do a completely vegan diet. But do one more thing. Keep the oils in your diet to a bare minimum. That means don't add oils to things. Learn how to cook without added oils. Use a nonstick pan instead of greasing up your pan. Use non-oil dressings. And of course, if you're avoiding animal products, you're avoiding all the animal fat, which is good. This is the time to avoid fatty foods like nuts, peanut butter, avocados. Okay, so just stick with that. You don't have to believe it. Just try it. So no animal products, keep oily foods to a bare minimum. And what you're going to discover, in what most people discover, is that PMS symptoms like bloating and water retention or moodiness, they're less noticeable. And if they're there, it's much shorter. And you discover that pain is less intense and less and much quicker. The duration is much less. Sometimes it's just flat out gone. These same changes help women who have endometriosis, which is a particular cause of menstrual pain, which is endometrial tissue has sneaked out around the abdomen, and it's causing often quite severe cramping. But the same diet change will help in that case too, probably.
Just because you've mentioned it a couple of times, can we talk about oil for a second?
Sure.
You know, a lot of people, when I say it has absolutely no nutritional value, people really don't believe me because, you know, we've been led to believe, well, the Mediterranean diet had a lot of oil in it, and it turned out in many studies to be a healthy diet, but now we know it's because of the fruits, vegetables, and grains. But can you talk a little bit about why oil is not healthy?
Well, first of all, the Mediterranean diet is a better diet than your average American is following, but it does not have the power of a vegan diet. It doesn't come anywhere close to it. If a person wants to lose weight or reverse heart disease or tackle their diabetes or hypertension, a Mediterranean diet is a very weak step in that direction. It sounds romantic. Have a glass of red wine and dip your bread in olive oil and imagine you're on the, you know, seaside restaurant in Tuscany. Yes, well, but if you want to really get healthy, don't stop there. I can't tell you how many people have done that and been disappointed by the fact that it just didn't work. Okay, so what about oil? First of all, vegetable oils are better than animal fats, but they are not as good as not having them. And here's what I mean. The particularly bad part of chicken fat or cheese fat, the really bad part of it is the saturated fat. All fats are kind of mixtures. If you could tease apart some chicken fat, there's some saturated fat, which is the more solid type fat. There's some unsaturated fat, which is the more liquid part, but they're all just mixed together in the fat. So for chicken fat, it's about 30% saturated fat. For beef fat, it's worse. It's about 50% saturated fat. That's terrible. But olive oil is much lower. It's about 14. So it's a lot better than chicken fat. However, it's not zero. If you leave the olive oil off, you got zero saturated fat, at least for that part of your diet. And there's very little saturated fat in beans and vegetables and grains and fruits. One other thing to maybe drive this point home. Probably nobody is going to say that added sugars are especially healthy. But think about it this way. Let's say you have a fruit, an apple, an orange, a pear, a banana. There are natural sugars in those foods that are healthy. They give you energy. That's good. Where we run into trouble is we take sugar cane and you send it to a factory where they remove all the pulp and all the fiber and every part of the sugar cane except the sugar, and they concentrate the sugar, and then they put it into a beverage they call Dr. Pepper, which despite its name is not a medical drink. And what you discover is that this is not healthy stuff. Well, what is extra virgin olive oil? You took olives, 10,000 olives. You sent them to a factory, and they removed all the fiber and all the pulp and every part of the olive except for the oil. And then they come up with this wonderful marketing term, virgin. But it's just like sugarcane, where you're removing the sugar and pretending that that's somehow a natural food. It's not. So olive oil, much better than chicken fat, definitely better. But if you're trying to lose weight, if you're trying to master your cramps, getting away from animal products is job one. Getting away from oils, including olive oil, is job two.
Good explanation. Thank you. You talk a lot in your book about the connection between cancer and hormones. Can women reduce their risk of hormonal-related cancers like breast and ovary cancer? And why is Japan a role model for not getting cancer?
Yeah, just as we were saying that a lower fat diet and a higher fiber diet reduces estrogen levels, that's really a traditional diet in Japan. If you looked at the Japanese diet in, say, 1970, McDonald's hadn't arrived yet. It was a Japanese diet, and their dietary staple was rice, phenomenal amounts of rice, vegetables, fruits. Very little meat, very little dairy. Even fish was not a huge thing. Yes, they would eat fish, but rice was the staple, and if they had some fish, it was more little bits and pieces to kind of flavor the vegetables and the rice and so forth. Anyway, when McDonald's arrived and the other fast food chains arrived, everybody westernized. Rice consumption started to fall away. It wasn't so popular. And what was popular was cheese and hamburgers and chicken, and it became a diet like people might eat in New York, except that you were in Tokyo. And several things happened. People started gaining weight, especially men, because they were doing the business lunches and things at first. And then women started to gain weight too. And diabetes came in, and people started to have more depression, more hot flashes in menopause. But among women, breast cancer rates doubled as westernization took hold. However, if you tease it apart, it did not increase among women who did not westernize their diet. It increased among women who westernized. So what we think is happening is that you're eating foods that are high in fiber, and suddenly you're not eating them anymore, and so your estrogen level rises. Suddenly you're eating a lot of fatty stuff, and suddenly you're eating cheese, which came out of a cow that was making estrogen, that you're now swallowing. That's what's happened in Japan, and unfortunately, breast cancer went way, way up, and we can take that lesson by doing the opposite, getting rid of the animal products, getting rid of the dairy products, and eating a plant-based diet.
Is lactose particularly harmful to the ovaries, and can you tell us about the Rutgers Cancer Institute study who examined the diets of women with ovary cancer?
Well, let me mention really this in a couple of ways. The short answer to your question is yes. In fact, let me start with fertility issues. Researchers looked at the loss of fertility in women. Women are mostly more fertile when they're in their 20s. But when you reach 30 and 35 and 40, your fertility starts to drop off a bit. And what researchers have discovered is that for a woman in Thailand, doesn't really drop off very much. From her late 20s to her late 30s, she maintains maybe 75% of her fertility. But if she's in Chicago, her fertility drops maybe 80% between her late 20s and her late 30s. That's true in New Zealand. Well, the theory was proposed by a researcher at Harvard named Dan Kramer that it had to do with milk. And it, lo and behold, yes, if you look at milk consumption, it follows this pattern. You can look at two dozen countries. The countries that have the most milk consumption have the biggest fall off in fertility. So Kramer's theory was that it's not the fat or the protein or the cholesterol, the usual things that are bad about dairy. He said, he didn't even think it was necessarily the estrogens. He thought it was the lactose sugar, which happens to be the biggest nutrient that's actually in the milk. It's there. The lactose is there to give energy to the calf. But in your bloodstream or in your digestive tract, the lactose breaks down to a smaller smaller sugar called galactose, G-A-L-A-C-T-O-S-E, galactose, and that's toxic to the ovary. And there are very few food sources of it, but dairy is a motherload of it. And so then researchers started looking at, just as you said, at other kinds of cancer, and there's also a strong connection between milk consumption and ovarian cancer. So the way we think about it is that this milk sugar is toxic. It's a toxicant to the ovaries. And normally human beings would never be exposed to it. You would be exposed to a little bit of lactose when you were nursing from your mother. And after the age of 18 months, 24 months, whatever, you wouldn't be exposed to it anymore. But with the dairy industry, people are exposed to it lifelong, and we think that it's a contributor to these problems.
How about hormonal cancers in men, like prostate and testicular cancer? There was a really fascinating study in your book that implied that lycopene can decrease a man's risk of developing prostate cancer by as much as 35%. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. And first, dairy is pretty clear. The evidence is pretty strong that dairy increases prostate cancer risk because it increases a substance in the blood called IGF-1. So so men should not be eating the cheese off of their women's pizza slices, off of their wives' pizza slices. it's bad for women. It's also bad for men. It's bad for both, is what I'm trying in my awkward way to say. But what could be protective? Lycopene. Yes, lycopene is the red pigment in tomatoes. It's also in watermelon. It's in pink grapefruit. And so it's a cousin of beta carotene, which is the orange pigment in carrots, for example. And just as you said, men who consume, maybe 10 servings or so of lycopene-rich foods every week have about a 35% less risk of prostate cancer. Even if the tomato products they're consuming are salsa or ketchup, some of these are healthier than others. But when men consume a lot of the lycopene, which is in any kind of tomato product, it's a powerful antioxidant that protects the prostate.
Wow. How many servings did you say a week?
About 10. So, you have some spaghetti sauce, some pizza sauce, some ketchup.
I love tomatoes.
A tomato on your salad. All these work.
So good for me. What about erectile dysfunction? Is that caused by hormones, and do you recommend Viagra?
A man can take Viagra, assuming he doesn't have contraindications to it and so forth. But there's a scenario that happens at almost every clinic, which is the guy goes into the clinic. He says, "Doc, I can't raise the flag." And men have a lot of euphemisms for this kind of thing. Anyway, so the doctor says, "I see you have erectile dysfunction. Would you like, are you here for a Viagra prescription?" And the man says, "Yes, that's why I'm here." So the doctor can write out the prescription and hand it to him. And then the guy says, "Oh, thanks." And then he runs out, to the elevator to leave. If the doctor is a good doctor, he or she drops the pen, races out after the patient and says, "We're not done. There's something I have to explain to you." And you tell the patient that the Viagra might help temporarily, but the reason that he has erectile dysfunction, in the vast majority of cases, is that he's got narrowed arteries. The arteries to his private parts have become narrow. And the reason they did that is he's eating a ham sandwich or some fried chicken or some shrimp or a steak or cheese. Animal products contribute cholesterol to the blood, and they contribute saturated fat, which causes the body to make more cholesterol. And the cholesterol particles irritate the walls of the arteries, which produce little sort of scar-like lesions that are called atherosclerotic plaques that narrow the artery wall. The passageway for blood is narrowed. Well, for a man to have sex, he needs good blood flow to his private parts. Otherwise, nothing happens. And so as his arteries there are narrowing, erectile dysfunction is the first thing he notices. And that can be temporarily corrected by Viagra, which just on a very temporary basis will expand those arteries. Here's the problem, and here's what the doctor is now explaining to the patient, is that if you have narrowed arteries to your private parts, you also have narrowed arteries to your heart, and you've got narrowed arteries to your brain in all likelihood, And so your risk of a heart attack or stroke is much higher than normal in just the next 3 to 5 years. So the Viagra won't help with any of that. You are a walking time bomb. And it's good that you had erectile dysfunction, because that just shows us there's something wrong. So the patient says, "Doc, what do I do?" And the doctor says, "Let's get the cholesterol and the animal fat out of your diet. Vegan diet." Okay, great. As he does that, his arteries start to open up again, assuming that he's also not smoking and physically active and a generally healthy lifestyle. And as time goes on, he gets healthier and healthier. He loses weight. His arteries open up again. And lo and behold, his erectile dysfunction will go away too in a great many cases. So that's really the issue. Viagra itself is just a Band-Aid, and it doesn't solve the real problem.
Well, since we're talking about hormone cancers, this is probably a good time to talk about soy products. In your book, you say soy cuts cancer risk. What do you base that on, and why is there so much confusion about soy products?
Back in, I think it was 1931, researchers discovered that soy has isoflavones in it. These are natural compounds, and some of them attach to estrogen receptors in the body. So researchers started to get nervous. They thought, well, maybe these isoflavones in soy could cause cancer. After all, things that attach to estrogen receptors, you know, can wreak all kinds of havoc in the body. However, the research studies that were done ended up showing exactly the opposite, that women who consume more soy products end up having less cancer, roughly 30 to 40% less breast cancer compared to women who don't have soy. And so we now have about 45, something like that, studies showing this, that women who consume the most soy have the least risk of breast cancer. And then going further, it turns out that women who previously were diagnosed with breast cancer, who are now consuming soy products like tofu or soy milk or soy yogurt or whatever, they also tend to have less likelihood of dying of their cancer. So soy doesn't cause cancer, it does the opposite. It reduces the likelihood of getting it, and it also reduces the likelihood of dying of it. So back to the lab, if the isoflavones attach to the estrogen receptors on a breast cell, what's the deal? And the deal is this. There are two different kinds of receptors on the cell. There's the alpha receptor. There's the beta receptor. Now, to be a little simplistic about it, think of the alpha receptor as the gas pedal that makes things go, like cancer. Think of the beta receptor as the brake. Well, soy attaches to the beta receptor, and soy is the brake. So soy products don't cause cancer. They have the opposite effect. And so, not to be left out of it, researchers on prostate cancer looked at soy and prostate cancer, and they found almost an identical number, about a 30% reduction in prostate cancer risk among the most soy-consuming men. So soy is optional. You don't have to have it, but it doesn't cause cancer. It's a good part of your anti-cancer toolkit.
Good to hear, because I love tofu. One of the most common problems that people experience are thyroid conditions. According to thyroid.org, an estimated 20 million Americans have some form of thyroid disease, and up to 60% of those with thyroid disease are unaware of it. And women are 5 to 8 times more likely to develop a disorder. Can you discuss the most common cause of thyroid problems and how food can affect the thyroid?
Yeah, there are really two big issues. Worldwide, the most common is a lack of iodine. Iodine is a simple element, and if your thyroid gland doesn't have the iodine, it's unable to make the hormone. Now, in 1924, the Morton Salt Company started marketing a product called iodized salt. It was salt with added iodine, and they put it in these blue cylinder containers with a girl and an umbrella on the side, and pretty much wiped out iodine deficiency, I have to say. Just a third of a teaspoon of iodized salt gives you all the iodine that you're going to need. Now, if you're a modern person, you're probably not consuming that anymore, and you might be having sea salt or kosher salt or Himalayan salt that may well not be iodized. And if that's the case, you might be getting low on iodine. So the answer to it is either get an you can get iodized sea salt, I mean, or kosher salt or whatever. They have it, but you got to look at the label. The other thing you can do is pick up some seaweed, either at a sushi bar. It's wrapped, the nori rolls or the sushi rolls are wrapped in nori, or there's wakame seaweed in miso soup. Don't have the fish sushi. Have the cucumber roll, have the asparagus roll, have the sweet potato roll. And the seaweed is very high in iodine in a good way. So that's thing one, is to make sure you got enough iodine. The thing two is actually more common in the United States, less common elsewhere, but a big, big contributor to thyroid disorder is the production of antibodies. Somehow these antibodies are formed in the bloodstream, and they're just like torpedoes. They're supposed to be knocking out viruses, or knocking out bacteria, but for some reason, when these antibodies form, they attack the thyroid gland. And that can cause the thyroid to shut down or to not be able to make a lot of thyroid hormone because it's under attack. That's hypothyroidism. It's sometimes called Hashimoto's thyroiditis. But there's another thing that can happen, which is that the antibodies can form and they can attack the regulatory mechanism so that the thyroid can't turn off. So now it's working overtime and you're getting too much thyroid hormone. And that's called Graves' disease, hyperthyroidism. So the most common cause of hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism is actually antibodies. And so then that raises the question, how do they get there? And we think that at least for some people, they are formed as a reaction to food. That you had a grilled cheese sandwich and the dairy proteins tricked your body into thinking that they were viruses. After all, they're foreign proteins. A cow's protein shouldn't be in your body. Your body thinks it's a virus, attacks it with antibodies. Those antibodies end up misfiring. They're going in the bloodstream. And the first thing they happen to run into is your thyroid gland, and they end up attacking it. And so the theory is that if I get those animal products out of my diet, it might protect me. We need more research in this area, but supporting it is the fact that people who follow diets with no animal products have the least risk of developing hypothyroidism or hyperthyroidism. And the people who have the biggest risk of hyperthyroidism are people who eat meat and dairy products, substantially higher than people who avoid them. So we think that the proteins in the animal products are probably triggering the antibody reaction. And we think that when people avoid that, they've got a chance of getting their thyroid back to normal. We need more research, and people who are being treated for thyroid disorders should work with their doctors and say, you know, I'd like to try a plant-based diet, and will you monitor my thyroid function as I do? The doctor will, of course, say yes.
I know personally that I used to take thyroid medication, and once I went on a vegan diet, I stopped, and my thyroid was fine. So it worked for me. Last, I definitely wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about some of the hormonal balancing recipes in your book, like the breakfast pilaf or the carrot and pea curry. It sounds so yummy. So who created those recipes, and how did you develop them?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for asking about that. Let me brag a little bit about something that I really can't take any credit for at all. It's Lindsay Nixon, Lindsay S. Nixon. She's the happy herbivore, and she is a genius in the kitchen. And we decided that we wanted to have recipes that had several features. They had to be free of animal products, totally vegan, totally healthy. They're not greasy stuff. It's really good and healthy, but they have to be delicious, they have to be familiar, and relatively few ingredients, so you're not shopping all afternoon and so forth, and relatively quick to make. So you're in your kitchen for 20 minutes or something, and you're done. And that's what she did. And when you go through the pages of it, you'll see familiar things, like how to make a pizza, how to make a wrap, how to make a noodle dish. But if you ask me, which one would I want to brag about the most? I really think you ought to try the chocolate cupcakes, because it really shows.
Yum.
It shows that a plant-based diet that's really healthy can can also be a little bit of a treat. But I have to say one other thing. As you saw in your Body in Balance, when Lindsay sent me the recipes, they're 65 and they are great. They're just fabulous. But she also sent a note that said, Dr. Barnard, I want you to know that the dietary changes that you recommend in this book cured, this way of eating cured my cramps too. So I'm going to call that real validation. Lindsay is an expert. She's an expert in the kitchen. She's an expert in recipe creation. She's also an expert in how foods affect your body. And so it has been an absolute delight to work with her. And I hope that people will read your Body in Balance. I hope they'll learn about how foods can affect things like cramps or infertility or sex hormones in general. Or if you got hot flashes and they're driving you crazy, you know, just go straight to the menopausal chapter in the book and see the information that's there. If you've got diabetes, if you have thyroid disease, learn how your hormones work. It is mind-blowing and it is empowering. However, if all you do is you make Lindsay's creations, you are going to be so happy. So give it a try. Give it a try.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Dr. Barnard, and sharing your vast knowledge. And people probably don't know this, but your medical center now has telehealth services to receive like medical care from the comfort of your own home, right? Doctors, dietitians, nurses, who all understand and promote a plant-based lifestyle. I will put a link in this week's show notes to that.
Thank you. Yes, please do. This has been something that we've worked on for a long period of time, but especially when COVID-19 arrived and people don't want to go out at all, being able to see a doctor or a nutritionist, a dietitian or nurse practitioner on your phone or on your iPad or on your laptop or your computer is a great, great benefit. And it's been a really cool thing to be able to do it. And the doctors love it, of course, because that means you have a lot more flexibility. You can see, it was kind of challenging to see somebody in Los Angeles when we were here in Washington, D.C., but now we can do that. Our website is barnardmedical.org. And if you want to just talk to a live human being and say, you know, sign me up, get me an appointment, we have live human beings who answer the phone. That's 202-527-7500. And a human being would be glad to talk to you and we'll get you set up.
It's especially awesome because it's so hard to find doctors who understand what a vegan diet is. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's been great to talk with you.
Okay.
Today.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye now.
Thanks so much to Dr. Barnard for being here today, and thanks to all of you for joining us. You can find today's show notes, me, my recipes, my 5-ingredient vegan cookbook, and my vegan CBD from hemp on ordinaryvegan.net. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. You can reach me at questions@ordinaryvegan.net. Please stay safe and stay well. Till next time.
Thanks for joining our plant-based community today. Together, we can accomplish great things. Please subscribe so you don't miss any of Ordinary Vegan's recipes and plant-based tips. If you have any questions or feedback, email us at questions@ordinaryvegan.net. Until next time.